Hello, hello, welcome to the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy Dowling, bass player for the Australian metal band Lord. And if you consider yourself a bit of a fan of old school heavy metal, then I strongly encourage you to go over to lord.net.au and you can go and give some of our tunes a crack over there. Lots and lots of links to check out. In addition to playing in a metal band, I also host the Self-Starter Podcast, which is all about small business, self-employment and freelancing. So if that tickles your pickle, you can go over to selfstarter.com.au or search for the Self-Starter Podcast in your preferred podcast player. Now, this week's shout out. Each and every week, I do a shout out, a public thank you to somebody that supports this podcast in a whole range of different ways, whether it be leaving a review for this podcast on somewhere, some platform, somewhere in the internet, doing some social media love, where it be tagging, liking, retweeting, all that kind of stuff. It could be buying some merch from the Andy Social website, andysocial.net, or it could be shouting me a beer via the PayPal button on my website as well. Whatever it might be, small or large, it goes a long way for me and keeps me motivated and driven to keep doing this podcast. So this week's shout out is for Rob Brenz. Rob, many of you people will know Rob. Rob is a drumming extraordinaire and plays in 150 million bands. Rob has been a supporter of the podcast for a little while now. He's picked up some merch. I'm looking forward to seeing him repping the Andy Social t-shirt somewhere in his travels. But Rob has played in a whole stack of amazing Australian bands over the years, and current band or main one is Hadalmore. I'll see if I get that pronunciation right. I butched it one way or the other. And you can check out more about all about Rob over at rob-brenz.com. He's got all of his stuff in there, bio. He's also a tutor, teacher, writer, and obviously musician. He's got heaps of content over there. I'm actually really impressed with his website. I might just steal it. And you can also search for Rob on Facebook as well, but just by searching Rob Brenz. He's got a Facebook page there that you can check out. I might have to get Rob on the podcast sometime. How about it? We'll see. Rob, shoot me a message. I'm going to find some crap that I can send out to you in the post, because we all love getting something in the mail. And as I always do, I'm looking around this room here to see what I've got. And there's plenty of rubbish that I can dump into a parcel of some sort and flick it out to you. So we'll see. But thank you so much, Rob. Really appreciate the support. Looking forward to seeing a photo of you wearing that Andy Social t-shirt, and really, really appreciate it. Now, moving along, this week's episode is a little bit different. It's with Pia Winberg, who's the founder of FICO Health and FICO Food Co. Now, the reason why this episode is a little bit different is because it originally aired on my Self-Starter Podcast. Now, as you guys know, my Self-Starter Podcast is all about small business, self-employment, freelancing, all that kind of stuff. And Pia's story and the business certainly fit into the category of what Self-Starter is all about. But I found the conversation and the topic and the business is all about seaweed science. And I thought, you know what, this is incredibly interesting. And I thought, stuff it, I'm going to put on the Andy Social podcast as well for you guys to listen to. So a little bit of context. If you want to listen to a more focused and refined version of this chat, you can go to selfstarter.com.au, where I also take out a number of key learnings and insights from the chat in the vein of Self-Starter. So you guys can go and check that out if you haven't listened to the Self-Starter podcast before. So that's selfstarter.com.au. However, for you guys, I have the full unedited version of this episode for you guys to listen to. There was a number of things that didn't quite apply to my Self-Starter audience, but I figured that you guys would actually find quite fascinating and interesting, because I certainly did myself. So you guys have got the full thing for you guys to absorb and take in. And Pia's story is just incredibly interesting. She is a marine ecologist who's based down the south coast of New South Wales, and she's created this business in the hope that Australia catches up with the East when it comes to seaweed farming, which is like a $6 billion industry. And because, I mean, a lot of you guys are Australians who listen to this, but actually, the majority of the listeners for the Andy Social podcast are from Western countries. And for many of us, we're all in the same boat as far as how much seaweed is in our diet or how much we utilize seaweed. And it's pretty minimal. Apart from the odd sushi roll and sushi and some sort of more Asian style foods, we don't really have a lot of seaweed in our diet. So Pia's mission and where she's going with this is she's creating a whole range of different foods that are very basic in concept, but she's added in this seaweed dynamic to it to, I guess, warm people to the concept of adding seaweed to their diet, because there's so many incredible benefits to it, which I didn't even realize. I knew it was healthy, but I didn't realize what benefits it could really provide people on a day-to-day basis. So There's so much here. There's some long-term plans that Pia has, and her background and what she does is incredibly fascinating. I'm going to leave her explain it. As I said, this is the entire chat. I have not taken anything out of it. It's completely unedited, apart from a little bit of polishing by TY. Thank you, TY, as always. And everything we speak about is in the show notes over at andysocial.net. If you want to learn more about seaweed science and FICO Health, you can go to ficohealth.com or search for FICO Food Co. on Facebook as well. But that is enough of me. Enough crapping on. Please enjoy this awesome episode with Pia Winberg of FICO Health and FICO Food Co. Well, Pia, thank you so much for inviting me to this weird and wonderful place that I kind of didn't, well, I knew it existed, but didn't really know it existed, considering I went to the wrong place to begin with. But thanks for having me.
No worries.
I guess before we kick right into it, do you want to give a brief introduction of who you are and what the business is as a whole?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a marine ecologist. That's my background. And originally from Stockholm, Sweden, but moved to the region just 20 years ago now. Live in Shoalhaven, but Mollymook Way, and was very aware of that conflict between marine ecology and conservation that was happening in the region and the history of the fishing industry here. And so people are losing jobs from that industry, and I'm trying to protect the marine environment. So there's got to be a middle ground solution instead of just conflict. And then I brought with me the ideas of seaweed farming, which was about improving the sustainability of aquaculture and being a seafood town and a seafood region, that should be something that we could do here. So that's the journey I'm on.
Okay, so I'm trying to think of where to start with this. There's so many different things, but I mean, I went on your website and had a look, and it's this clash between, and I mentioned this before we started recording, your background in this science background now clashing with the business world and trying to make a sustainable business, but also having all the benefits of the for the environment and the industry and whatnot. But there's so many products that you're creating out of seaweed. And I think in theory, if you talk to the everyday person, they'll understand seaweed and they'll probably understand some benefits maybe of seaweed, I guess for the environment more so than anything else. But I think there's probably still a lot of stigma around seaweed products. Unless you eat some sushi and every once in a while. So I looked at this and I was amazed, and I went, wow, there's so many different things, not just from a food, like human food, but like also for agriculture, skin, digestion, all these different things. So what was, did you start with one product and then sort of went, oh, there's actually more opportunities here, or do you already have an idea of where you're going to go?
Seaweed's like there's a platform of opportunity. It's a new, I'd say, you call it then biomass or crop, that's just really unexplored in the West. If you look globally, seaweed is a $6 billion global crop.
That's a B as well. Billion.
Yes. It's farmed. Most of it is farmed. So they're seaweed farms. Most of them are based at sea. But most of it's happening throughout Asia. And even though it's big now, it's just grown, it's exploded in the second half of the last century. It was only really started in the 1940s by a female scientist in Britain, who Kathleen Drew Baker, who unlocked the sex life of nori. So nori seaweeds that we have around our sushi rolls have a really complicated life history. Wow. There's three sort of different stages of their sexual reproduction, three different kinds of organisms to deal with. And she unlocked how that works. And that's what the Japanese jumped onto and established the first nori farms back in the 1940s. And they actually have a national day, the Kathleen Drew Baker Day in Japan, celebrating this British scientist who started the industry for them. And so that, of course, we now have that throughout our supermarkets. So that's really skyrocketed, but it was the first seaweed crop. And that's 1940, so it's not even a century old, but it's really skyrocketed. And now Japan grows that. China has taken on growing kelp to supplement the whole population for iodine deficiency. Iodine is one of the biggest causes of brain damage in the world, and seaweed is a way to get it. Seaweed's very rich in it. So they grow that for iodine. But not only that, they now grow that for alginate, which is now a global commodity. And further red seaweeds have started to be grown in the Philippines and Indonesia. to extract carrageen, which you might know is from Irish moss and cough lozenges things. And each of these three different seaweeds have very different properties. It's like saying potatoes, blueberries and capsicum, you know, very different things.
Wow.
And different benefits and there's different applications. So the alginates and the gelling properties are used in, like carrageens, used in foods. And if you look on a salad dressing and it says E407, that's a seaweed extract that used to stop the herbs sinking to the bottom of your salad dressing in a commercial product. So there's also those types of gels in fire hydrants. Most of the paint on our walls has those seaweed molecules in them. Printer ink in your printers, fire hydrants. So it's really seaweed as a crop and a biomass is a commodity that there's so many opportunities. It grows in salt water. It's very sustainable, grows very fast. And Australia's just not doing it. So it was like,
I didn't even know half
start?
Of that. I didn't even know. I mean, I'm just thinking from just even when I looked on the products that you're selling, I was surprised by some of them, but I didn't realise it was to the extent that it's already in the market. I mean, as you say, Australia hasn't really jumped on board with it, but a lot of the things that we use and surround ourselves with have got a form of extract.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And and it's something, you know, we really missed. We're looking for a new crop that's not going to take more fresh water from agricultural production. And it's also a crop, and this is where we've sort of focused our efforts, is that, yeah, we can do animal feeds and aqua feeds and crop fertilizers and crop health-promoting molecules as well. And we can do high-end biomedical devices as well, but we need to start a company that gets to market quickly and has a reasonable value. And that's where human food and nutrition is just screaming out for something to address the Western deficiencies, especially in dietary fiber and trace elements. And seaweed is the king of dietary fiber and masses of marine trace elements. So we can inject seaweed into our mainstream foods that we eat every day without changing anything else in the food system. So that's what we do, is we put 10% seaweed in our pasta, and that fortifies all your trace elements. You don't need mineral supplements, and it helps your gut flora benefit from the added dietary fibers, because we're very deficient in dietary fibers in the West, and is one of the causes of a range of our inflammatory diseases that we're challenged with. So we've done clinical trials on that as well. So those are the food and the nutritional and health benefits of seaweed are the ones we're focusing on first. That's to get to market as soon as we can and establish a seaweed industry in Australia.
So it sounds like you've got a few different agendas as far as the motivations behind creating the business. Like the business is sort of a mechanism to push a bigger thing that's important to you.
Yeah.
And given your background in the industry, this is a device to be able to get more attention and be able to bring in investors and bring in more money to be able to scale up and provide more for not just the community locally, but nationally and internationally as well.
Yeah, for sure. Because I'm a scientist, I work a lot on an international platform, and there's many people talking about, well, seaweed's algae, so it's a macroalgae. So many people talking about algae for different applications in biofuels and food and nutrition and things in a scientific space. But it sort of gets stuck in a rut in science and universities. Academia just sort of keep telling each other about, wow, I found this seaweed, it's got 10 anti-inflammatory benefits or something. And it's like, well, okay, and so what? Where does it go from there? And I just was sitting inside academia going, yeah, I can publish 50 papers and tick myself off as a successful academic, but it actually doesn't change anything until someone takes it out and does something with it in the real world.
Is that a common thing that you've seen I guess there's all these secrets. They don't appear to be secrets in those communities because everyone knows, but there's a difficulty in translating that out of those inner circles. So
massively huge. That's what I've learned, is that a lot of the problems we face in terms of progress in society is silos, and whether it's a silo of the health industry or a silo in defense, which we've got a silo of here, or silos in academia. And academics don't necessarily talk the same language as industry people, as businessmen. And so they're talking a lot of technical stuff that doesn't really have an applied focus to it. And it's very difficult for other people to understand, and what will that do? So that's where I've learned that communicating to the public beyond other scientists, because scientists' job is to impress other scientists. That's what their currency is.
Yeah.
And that's what they do, is they try and point score on each other by working out the next most complicated smart thing. And they are wonderful things they work out. Yeah. But if you're not going to take it to the world and do anything with it, then that can be, you know, a not so productive pastime. So it really stays in that world. What's the incentive for someone to come out of academia and do that? And I guess living in this regional town is where I just go, well, you feel pretty hypocritical sitting in an ivory tower of academia preaching, saying the world should do this, and the world's going, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You have to actually step out and make the bridge. So bridging the silos, I think, is really important for progress across society.
Mm. Did you have any prior experience with like running a small business, or have any business background, or did you have to find other people and lean on other people to, like, I don't know, mentors or anything like that, just to try and, you've got all this knowledge, but how do you translate that, or how do you get it over that hurdle into another, a larger platform where it's more accessible and understandable by the general public?
Yeah, so it is a challenge to take an academic way of thinking and put your money where your mouth is, and try and get to market and do something with it is very different. And I do now have a range of good advisors. We're actually housed at iAccelerate, which is sort of an incubator for startups for our food brand, and there's a lot of independent advisors there. The challenge has been that we've had a lot of interest to invest in the company, but the advice you get in those instances and how to create and start the company, it's from the investors investing, and so it's not impartial advice. So you learn that the hard way by just doing it. So I'd always say, you know what, if people have got an idea and it falls outside their core skills, but they're bringing a certain set of core skills, well, just start doing it. You'll find out where you're hitting the walls. Do you need someone else to come in and help you on that front? Or can you use your logical mind and overcome and solve it? And it's a bit of a balance. You've got to do a lot in a startup that is, you know, get your accounting systems up to speed. I never needed an accountant before I started a business. And now I know my cloud-based accounting systems and have a reliable accountant. But and those things you learn and can take on. And as you scale, you've got to start bringing other people in that can take over those jobs for you. But it's a slow process. And always start small and take the little steps rather than taking some giant leap and having all these chasms that you've got to get over.
Especially if you had the concept in mind, you thought, okay, we've got to do something about this knowledge that we've got, and you've probably got this pie in the sky vision of where you would love it to go, but then thinking from where I am now to that point is so vast, and I can't even see where the steps are to be able to scale it right back and go, what do I need to do today, this week, this month?
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I think a lot of people just stop on an idea and they don't do anything because they're too busy worried about the vision of where they want it to be, but they can't work out how the hell to get from where they are now to that point.
And that's a challenge every day. So, we do have the long-term strategies of where do we want to be in 5 years and how big are we thinking and where do we want to be in a year and what does that mean I have to get done by next week? Then in the morning you wake up, well, which thing on the list do I get done today? And that's just a challenge and a discipline. You've got to just learn to not be discouraged or disheartened when you're not getting through your list and you're changing. And that's something I've learned in the startup world is startup is about trying something and pivoting, knowing that three things you're going to try, some are not going to work, and then you just go, oh, that didn't work, all right, pivot means we go this direction instead. So it's about learning to failure. It's not failure, it's actually testing. Didn't work, try that way and move forward.
Especially from an academic background as well, that ties straight into that logical way of thinking where you test something, it's either a true result or a negative result, and then you, based off that, you move into another direction.
Yeah.
So, because I was going to say, for something like this where I guess there's still a lot of stigma in old school Australians about seaweed, and they go, the only time you see that is in a sushi roll, and I don't really eat a lot of that. And so you don't think about the benefits or all the possibilities.
Mm.
You would come across a level of rejection or trying things out that end up in what would be seen as potentially a failure but ends up being a learning.
Yeah.
you know, you'd have to have a lot of resilience to be able to sort of keep testing and going, well, that doesn't work, or that person's not interested, next, and keep going along the trail.
Yeah, and you can see as well, because a good thing to do as well is to go out into markets, like go to farmers markets and put the food in front of someone and say, try this, do you like it? And watching the reaction and talking to them. And maybe 30 years ago it would have been a lot harder, but people sort of get that seaweed's good for them. They don't understand exactly how or why or how to use it, but they get it. There's sort of an intrinsic, oh yeah, that seaweed's good for you, I'll try one of those. There's still people that just wrinkle their nose, don't understand, but there's enough population in the world, you know, that is into the idea.
Yep.
And as soon as they have the opportunity to access it in this everyday sort of way, they'll embrace it. And we've actually found that by going to the markets and people going, wow, this is exciting, it tastes great, I'll buy that. And it's now more the challenge that, well, it grew faster in demand than we grew in supply. So that's our current challenge, is how do we grow the production and everything faster.
And as you said earlier, before we started recording, talking about the first products and trying to get attention and trying to get buy-in from people, not only investors but the general public, and thinking about everyday items that people already know, and then sneaking the seaweed in. And it's almost like it makes a traditional product with an element of novelty to it.
Yeah.
So then people like the idea of giving it a shot because it's not so foreign that they've never tried it before. They understand the concept of muesli or chips or... you know, I can't remember what else you've got there. There's a couple of other products.
Yeah, pasta
as well. Sorry, So traditional everyday products that people eat anyway, but then giving it a little bit of a novelty for a lot of people to go, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
You know, how bad could it be? It's pasta or it's muesli or it's chips. And it's just something that it's a good warm way to get people into a new concept.
Yeah, no, and it works really well like that. So people, both people who are into novelty, and so I would say, you know, even some of the husbands that just like their bangers and mash, I've said we've got a great Dukka blend that we call Fuka. It's everything starts with PH for FICO, which means algae. But I say just put two massive tablespoons of this blend, which is 10% of our seaweed, into mashed potatoes, stir it around, and it's really flavoursome. We've blended it with cumin seeds and pistachios and other things. So it's not like a straight-on, you know, miso soup that someone has to start to deal with. And it's, you can eat your mashed potatoes and you don't have to have this massive pile of broccoli next to it, and you're still getting a lot of your nutrients that you need. And so it's about making it easy for the consumer. That's something I try and bring through everything in the company, from the farm to the consumer, is keep it simple, stupid.
Yep.
Don't overcomplicate it.
Perfect.
And try and make it easy for the consumer to pick it up and put it on their plate today, not put it in the cupboard and go, oh, that's interesting, I'll try it one day. Do it today.
And it's not a case that you're reinventing. It's not the case that you're creating a completely new product that's never been seen before. You're reinventing an existing thing or concept. So, you know, for people that, you know, and more power to them, if they create a whole new thing, a product or a service that no one's ever seen before, that's fantastic and it's exciting. But they've got an additional element of time and effort invested, because they have to educate people first and tell them and show them what the thing is.
Yeah.
Whereas you have an element of that with this, but it's a bit more of, here's the product, you understand what it is, but here's this extra element added to it to make it unique and different. So you're reinventing existing concepts. So it's a lot easier, and it gives you a little bit of an extra step forward or ahead of the rest of the pack when it comes to that.
Yeah, it does. And it's in part the novelty, but it's also in part that it's actually needed for some of the health problems that we've got in the Western food plate. And it's really hard to change the whole food production system and the Western food plate. I would say that if everybody in Australia suddenly wanted to eat, you know, a foodie kind of diet with all their quinoa and vegetables and everything on it that you might get in a Newtown restaurant or something, it wouldn't practically work. It just is not logistically possible because those products are not on the supermarket shelves in quantities for the whole of Australia.
That's right.
You can't do it.
No.
So most of the products on the shelves are cornflakes and refined foods. And so how do we do it? We can't just change that overnight. And that's where adding seaweed to that, to putting back what was missing, is actually going to help people with some of the chronic health issues they face because of a Western diet. And the knowledge that we've lost is about the West having lost a lot of knowledge about how food is important for your whole life in keeping you healthy. We're just trying to make that easier on an issue that is a whole national, international population challenge.
I think, I don't know, even like me growing up, I mean, food was just to fill the stomach. It was a bit of fuel to keep you going, and but not really thinking about it. You're either empty or you're full, and that's it. And not really thinking about the types of foods or the nutrients or the benefits that come out of eating particular things over others. You know, I mean, I think luckily for us, we're in an era now where it's becoming more of a conversational topic where people are interested and they want to find out more. And, you know, freedom of information and, you know, digital age certainly helps as well. So you've got the food element and you've also got skincare. And supplements as well. And then, I mean, even just you've got three different potential industries there that are just huge amounts of opportunity and potential in all of them. So is that a stage two? I know you've started producing products in those categories, but are they more stage two, stage three type things that you're looking at, and foods being the initial focus?
Yeah, we used to really separate the supplements and the skin from the food, thinking that they are different. We're talking to a different consumer and we've got a different brand. But then we just started looking at it and the kinds of foods that are in like your Whole Foods stores in the USA, which has now been bought by Amazon and is now totally mainstream. So, you know, I was in the US just last month in Reno, of all places, in Nevada, and there's a Whole Foods store and everyone's eating bucket loads of kale and seaweed. Like, and there are some food fads, but there's also some food realities about, you know, real benefits for people's health in the future. That kind of store actually does have food, skin products and supplements next to each other on the shelf. And we realized, because the skin creams we're making are made from all natural ingredients, sandalwood, aloe veras, and our seaweed extracts. And people are now talking about, you know, eating the skin cream on your skin you know, putting your food on your skin. So both ways. And the supplements are really around not being a medicine, but saying if you really aren't getting enough dietary fiber through the food, then you can top it up with a capsule that's concentrated the dietary fibers. So it's really a part of the food. It's an extension of that. And so we now are marketing those three categories alongside each other under the one brand. And the skin creams, we're actually doing research to medical grade level where we're able to show that the seaweed extract blocks enzymes that would break down collagen and things like that. We're looking at making artificial skin tissue with the University of Wollongong to look at healing wound burns, because the seaweed skin cells, human skin cells, identify and especially this Australian green seaweed that we're working with, distinct from the big international gels that they're producing, human skin cells love our seaweed extract attached to it and grow all over it. So you can create new skin tissue. And with the digestive capsule extracts, we've done two clinical studies where we look at shifting the gut flora, refeeding the gut. People have heard of probiotics and the yogurts and things where you're eating the bacteria you need. But unless you're actually feeding them to those bacteria in your gut, they're passing through. So this is called prebiotic, the seaweed extract, in that it feeds bacteria that you may already have and builds up that populations that need that complex dietary fiber to have a good ecosystem in your gut. So we've done two clinical studies on that and shown we've reduced inflammation and cholesterol. And some people with inflammatory conditions are actually indicating that they see a benefit in things like psoriasis as well. So we're really going to expand on the clinical work behind that.
Possibilities are endless. It's incredible. So would you, or are you thinking about, because obviously there's an end consumer opportunity where your everyday person is able to buy these products and get value out of them. But are you looking like from a business to business opportunity where you're providing products to, you know, the medical world or different businesses that can then provide, use that as a tool for their own services as well. It's like a, because that's obviously a massive opportunity there.
Yeah, it is. So we've gone all the way to a food brand ourselves because we realize nobody gets it. So we've got to create this brand that shows people what we're talking about. And that's taking traction. But as we scale, of course, our ingredients and the molecules we make will have applications for other companies and their products. And, you know, the medical side, especially the, you know, tissue healing and, you know, one day you're looking at, you know, maybe printing someone's ear with 3D. We're actually printing our seaweed extracts at the Uni of Wollongong into structures, scaffolds that cells can grow onto and into. And it's the early stages and, you know, you've got to get vascular tissue into that and start things growing. But we're already finding that with our seaweed gels, they're actually taking a big leap forward in providing the structure that and the molecules that cells need to start growing onto. It's all been about, you know, we can print cells, but the problem's been, but the cells have to have a structure around them. It's like us. We're not just a lump of cells. We actually have connective tissue as much or more than our cells, and we need to have that to structure our bodies. And that's what the seaweeds are actually doing, providing a structure for human cells that mimics our own connective tissue.
It's knowing all these secrets and then finding a way to translate it to everybody else and go, look, these are the possibilities, but then turning it into a product and a service and something for somebody else. It's incredible. It's just mind-blowing that there's this, the potential value that and things that most people would never be aware of, not just from, you know, a nutritional point of view, but for everyday health and even in extreme circumstances, as you said, with like, you know, burns and things like that, it can be a great benefit.
Yeah, no, huge benefits. And you want to tackle all of those challenges tomorrow, but you also know that it's certain things are going to have to be a long-term journey. But you can't let that stop you. And, you know, we were looking in the beginning at these medical materials, but then you go, hey, it's a 10-year trajectory of trials and working things out. But the human food and the nutrition and selling someone corn chips, I can do that tomorrow. And that's the first step we need to take, and that can make a big difference.
And so obviously that will make a big difference with, you know, the end consumer in the short term, and they're going to get value out of it and enjoy it, and that's going to help with, you know, the population's nutrition. But I'm assuming that the money that's being built off that and the business being built will then fund the bigger scale operations and the bigger visions that you've got for the business. I mean, we walked around this area and looking at what you've created already, I mean, that's impressive. And you mentioned that you've raised about $1 million so far. And just giving me a hint of where you want to go and what you need to do. I mean, obviously you've had to start somewhere and you've got to this point now, but I look at this point now and go, oh my God, like I'd never be able to get to this. I don't know how the hell you'd even pull any of this off, but it's incredible. And I think, as you said before, one of your big challenges at the moment is you're at this stage, but now how do you scale up? How do you get to that next level?
Yeah. And that's where you've got to stop and take stock and say, okay, we've actually achieved what we wanted to prove, in that we can grow the seaweed, we can make these extracts, and we can make food products that the market wants. And we've got a whole range of products for the future as well. So now we need to look at reinvesting with some serious investors that can really help you take it to a proper scale, but also grow and selling as much as you can of the products that you're making to reinvest in the growth of the business, as you said. And so understanding those balances, and being a scientist, you come into the world of business and startups and you didn't realize that there's actually sort of different clear stages. They identify this. Are you on your A funding round raise or your B round? And it's like, what's A and B funding rounds? Like, this is the jargon of silos.
Yeah.
And you have to come in as a scientist with an idea and talk to this, you know, big audience of investors and business people who sort of bamboozle you with their jargon. And over time you learn, okay, where are we? And just through talking and presenting it to people without expecting an outcome, that's one of the most important things, is just go out there and talk to businessmen, present your idea. I mean, I've had investors or business advisors say to me, because I was maybe too geeky talk, and they said, you're boring me, and shut the door. You're like, right, that didn't work. So maybe I'll try it a different way next time. And yeah, not to be disheartened by that, but just keep going. What was it that didn't work? What did I say that they didn't understand? And then take the next step towards growing it. But just last month, I was very lucky indeed to get to go up to a venture capital company, so a company that invests lots of money, and founded by Al Gore in San Francisco and his partner. And I got to go up there and speak to the co-founding partner about what we're doing, and they loved what we're doing. They invest in renewable energy because they see that making change is around investing in businesses that will make the change. Yep. But of course, renewable energy being solar and wind farms, they're sort of starting platform for their venture capital funds, $30 million. And we're like, well, I'm not ready to accept $30 million in the company right now. And then you realize, okay, I'm at this stage of growth. So what I need now is investors that invest at this amount. And I need to think about getting the structure of the company right. So because as it grows, I'm not talking here about a cozy little cottage seaweed industry, which would be wonderful, but it's not going to make an impact in the sustainability or the nutritional objectives that we've got. So it actually, you know, the big solutions to the big problems, they have to be big, and we have to think big but take the small steps to get there.
Do you think that being a little bit naive and not understanding how a lot of that works is has been a bit of an advantage at certain times, because you probably stepped into, as you said, some of those situations where you probably shouldn't be. And if you had that knowledge, you go, oh, I'd never do that. But sometimes you might find that there's new opportunities, or you learn a lot quicker because you don't have that hesitation because you don't know. So you can go in there and for lack of a better term, you can sort of play the dumb card and go, I don't understand, and this is my idea, what do you think? And then you might get shot down, but you learn a lot quicker than...
Absolutely.
Yeah, you haven't got that hesitation.
Yeah, no, you've just got to go in there and be prepared to take the falls and get up again. And that's something you just, in your head, you just go, yep, it's going to be tough days, but you just got to pick yourself up. And reflection and looking back has been really important, because... like you said, I get up every day and I'm going, oh, this isn't working, or that's not working. But then you stand up and you look at the pilot factory we've got, or the seaweed farm we've got, and the carbon we're capturing, and you just go, wow, that's pretty unique in the world. And then that just goes, okay, we're on the journey. I'll get over this next little hurdle. And you do have to reflect on that a lot to move forward. And on the advice, like, you get a lot of conflicting advice, you get different advice, and you've got to sort through your head what's making sense, what's not making sense, and make a decision. Not umming and ahhing for too long, going, I don't know the answer. You have to make a decision and try it.
Yeah.
That's the way forward. Two steps forward, one step back.
That's right. Kind of thing. You're going to learn quicker and grow quicker. Even if it is an initial mistake, you can recover a lot quicker than just sitting back and waiting for the perfect moment that makes enough sense for you to make that next step. You can go, look, there's enough there that I can take that risk and give it a shot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you look at things, I always say, like, wow, the iPhone 1 wasn't very perfect. The iPhone 8, you know, is a lot better. But they didn't wait for the iPhone 8 to come out. They start and you realize, well, that's progress. You know, what we look like today is built on what people tried 100 years ago. And, you know, we're always standing on the shoulders of everyone who's gone before us and taking the journey further.
And the good thing is that when you do get to that high level where you really sort of, you've got to the point where what you've been aiming towards, most people forget where you've come from anyway. You'll remember, and that's good for reflection and rewarding yourself, but most people won't remember the first few stumbles and the rough patches, because they're focused on what you've become.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, you do get that, like, people looking at you like, you know, you've just blossomed overnight, and you're going, well, it's 20 years ago I started looking at seaweed and I didn't wake up suddenly going, I'm going to be a seaweed farmer. You know, that sort of thing's evolved over 20 years, and just keeping your eye out is what's the challenge, what's the opportunity, and what needs to be done.
Yeah.
Because there's so much that just needs to be done, and what do you know that can contribute to overcoming it? And having a go is really important. You know, Australians say and talk about having a go, but, you know, a lot of people are still a bit too hesitant to just put their neck out there and really have a go, because there's a lot of shooting down in Australia. Yeah. But I think, well, we just... yeah, got to let that wash off and keep going.
I don't think there's a great deal to lose. I think some people think there's a lot, but I think in the grand scheme of things, there's not much to lose. No. You can always recover, I think. And So a couple of things before we wrap up, and I know that we're sort of where you've had a long day and there's a lot going on, but from a commerce point of view, just with your products and making money and selling these products, and we had a quick look at some of the packages and the different products you got in the other room. You've got an online store, and I saw that, and so you've got a system set up online. How's that been beneficial for the business? Obviously, might help to reach more people. Is that the main driver for you selling your products, or are you using other channels as well to sell these products?
Yeah, so we've got a few stores. Like we saw the Whole Foods USA market supermarkets as a sort of a model for the type of store that tells a bit of the sustainability nutrition story, and that customers that go there are looking for those two things, and that that would be the type of store that we're interested in getting into, because otherwise you're, you know, sitting in a place that no one really understands what you're about, maybe. So so there are some sort of food market type stores that are stocking our products in Perth in Western Australia. Yep, the Boatshed Market just bought boxes of our products and are stocking them there. But we're also wary of just scaling carefully. And that's where the e-commerce and online store works well, because we can just be, we can be a bit smaller while we need to be small. But you can then also reach out globally. And we do, since our gut health studies were written up about by Michael Mosley in his latest gut book, have 2,000 people waiting in the UK on our gut capsules. So we're like, wow, that's a problem. So how do we address them and get to them? And it really is e-commerce marketing, I think, will be our core. And also, as a scientist too, you don't really understand how food gets to market. But from the farm to the supermarket shelf, there's all these people in between, and they're all sort of clipping the ticket on the way through. And with a new product that's pretty small, it's going to be pretty pricey for the consumer anyway. And then you look at all these people clipping the ticket on the way through and not necessarily always adding value. And a lot of it's been about, you know, well, you need those people to communicate to the supermarket who's going to buy your product. And we were sort of like, well, we're happy to communicate online and do the internet marketing and focus it that way. And since we've adopted that strategy, our current website has been working, and we're selling products there every week. But we've also now going to launch a new website in a couple of weeks, which takes it up to a bit more of a sophisticated level, telling people about more details about why seaweed's good for you, what you need to look out for in seaweeds, how it helps different nutritional and health outcomes. And we've been lucky too, because you can start a website now like we've done on platforms that are made easy for people to use. But now we need to up the level at the incubator and startup space that we're in at the University of Wollongong. There's actually a woman who's starting a sustainable packaging and marketing and branding company. And she was actually one of the branding people for the original Starbucks, and she's moved to Wollongong. So she's now someone, just through networking with startup people, is now the person developing our brand and image and getting a much flashier website up. So that's something that we're now very focused on investing in. And it's about getting information onto that page, because we want to sell the consumer real nutrition, not fads. And there's many products that get out to the market and based on a fad, and they'll come and they'll fade away.
Yep.
But we see seaweed as a very real and long-term solution to population health issues, and it isn't going to go away. But we need to get the story out accurately from the beginning, and so that's what we're going to try and do through that website as well, is you can buy the products and know how they're going to help you.
Well, I think a big thing, like with this podcast and what I've seen a lot of examples of, is the people that are doing really well have a story attached to it, and they use their business not only to sell the product or the service, which is like the basic mechanics of what a business is, but they're using that platform and that audience to educate and to sell the concept rather than just the product or the service. So what you said then about talking about the benefits of seaweed, but then translating it into just Joe Blow, who's going to log onto the website and go, I want to be healthy.
Yeah.
And then they listen, or they read, or they watch, and then they suddenly understand and get the concept a lot more. And then that gives them more of a like an urge or a want to be able to click on that button and pay for that product as well.
Yeah, absolutely. When people are more in tune in making their own decisions and trying to get real information on products instead of just, you know, being blasted with advertisements, people are exploring more the solutions about where their food comes from and how it's good for them. So once again, the timing's pretty right for us, I think. You know, 20, 30 years ago, it would have been a bigger challenge. Yeah. And so time is also important in progressing things in the right way. Yeah.
So the last thing, and we'll try not to get down too much of a rabbit hole with this, but I think just given the area and all the episodes that I've had on so far have all been Shoalhaven businesses. Mm. And so we spoke a little bit about this before, but you've got benefits being in this area because of the type of work that you're doing. Mm. And it's a coastal area and obviously, you know, the product is in the area, so that helps. Your perspective, I mean, are the challenges being in this area as well from, I guess, stigma, being a little bit away from, you know, more densely built up areas? Because I see a lot of opportunities in the area and I see a lot of things that aren't being done. You know, what's your sort of take on it, or what have your experiences been working in this area?
Yeah, well, we've lived in the Shoalhaven now for 20 years, and having come from Stockholm or lived in Sydney for, you know, in city life for most of our lives, we moved down here going, wow, this is, we sat in Stockholm and looked on the earth as a globe and said, where do we want to live? And we'd experienced the south coast and just went, wow, that's where we want to live. And we thought, wow, we're going to have to be challenged in terms of getting work. But When you've got such an asset as a great lifestyle place, and we're not too far away from Sydney, so you can't blame the regional remoteness of it all, we've got a whole set of opportunities that Sydney just doesn't have. And it's about, well, one, bringing in people that have expertise, but we can also build up the expertise of the people here to start developing the opportunities. And you wouldn't grow seaweed in Sydney Harbour. You wouldn't want to eat it.
No.
Seaweed mops up metals and pollution, and then you ended up with a seaweed that doesn't work. Mm. And so we've actually created a network down here called Blue Biotech Shoalhaven, because we can actually harness the sun and the clean coastal water with beautiful national park catchments, and it has a history of forestry, fishing and farming. It's a bio-industry region. It's not a heavy industry region. We've started this Blue Biotech Network to say, well, we can capture things from the ocean and the coastal, clean coastal environment, and we can process it and we can put it into a skincare cream in Nowra. So we're catching the sun and putting it in a bottle in a 10-kilometre radius. And you could not do that in Sydney.
No.
You wouldn't want to do that in Sydney.
Yep.
And so it's not just our seaweed, but there's an oyster industry with opportunities to grow here. There's still fishing that can be promoted and integrated into this thinking of blue economy and clean coastal environments. And we've got a massive restaurant trade that's fantastic chefs on the south coast that are willing to put those sorts of new products into their foods. And there's even other industries here like you know, I'm thinking the Defence Force. The Maori battalion in World War II went to war with nori because that was their traditional food. They're picking the nori and sending soldiers to battle with nori. And I'm like, well, the Defence Force is down the road. I'm sure they're a bit constipated. I can get some seaweed into their diet. So there's all of these sorts of things that you can start to see are opportunities that are here, not opportunities in Sydney.
Do you think a lot of it's just people taking the time just to stop and think about things? I think, you know, we're always just stuck in our rut doing the same thing over and over again. And I think when you sort of take a little bit of extra time to stop and just look around, it's like brainstorming when you're sitting with a couple of people and you're talking and you're bouncing ideas backwards and forwards. Where you start and where you end up are two vastly different places. And I mean, I've lived in Queensland and lived in Sydney before coming down here, and I had a different perspective and I could see some of the things that were spoken about in the area and the hot topics, but it was always about what was not here and the lack of something rather than the possibilities.
Yeah.
And so for me, I thought, oh, this is like, for me, I love it because it is a bit of a sanctuary away from the densely built up areas, and you've got that great balance of life down here.
Mm.
And for me, with the internet, definitely helps. You know, I can work from home. And I just think, you know, there's a population down here as well. And so you have an advantage in some ways because of your skill set and your background. But regardless of that, I think if people just stopped and just had a look around and thought, what would people need? You know, what are the different businesses that are in the area and what do they need? So even from whether it be the end customer or the B2B opportunities, there's just so much down here.
Oh, there's massive opportunity. And I think maybe some of the problem is that it's too nice and people don't leave, so they don't get the perspective that they need to have to go, oh, wow, it really is nice, and what the opportunities are. And I think I've had the benefit of being able to live in Sweden and Stockholm, which is, you know, a great society, but it's mighty cold. You don't have to deal with that here. I've done research in third world countries like Sri Lanka, and then you go, wow, well, I've got nothing to complain about. Yeah. Those things are really important eye-openers, because I think you do then come back and understand what the opportunities are, what the massive, resources and support we have to actually do something. Yep. It is still a land of opportunity. And also what you don't want to end up like, because you go and see many places and you go, wow, we actually can't take this peaceful oasis for granted.
Yep.
We actually have to work hard at maintaining it in a state as it grows that we like, because some of the countries, some of the society systems that you see, it's like we're not immune to that. And if you look at the population on planet Earth living like this, we're a minority in a big way. And absolutely. So what do you do in your everyday life in working towards trying to maintain and achieve what is a great society and keep it moving in that direction?
Don't take it for granted.
Mm.
Well, I think this is a great way to end it off. I'll put links and everything in the show notes and on the website. But thank you so much. And I have no idea. I mean, you've got an idea, but I have no idea where this business of yours is going to go. But it looks so exciting, and just to learn more about the various shades of what this is all about is really, really interesting. So
You're welcome.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thanks, everyone. As always, if you want to learn more about this guest in this episode, you want to learn more about Pia and her journey and FICO Health or Seaweed Science, you can go to andysocial.net and I'll have all the links and everything we discussed over in the show notes there. You can also go to ficohealth.com, which is phycohealth.com, or you can search for FICO Food Co. on Facebook as well. I'll also put in a link to the self-starter version of this podcast in the show notes over at andysocial.net. So if you haven't had the chance to check out Self-Starter, this might be a really good opportunity to click through and see what that podcast is all about. You'll be able to see how it sounds, how I structure it. There's a whole bunch of different blogs over there as well. And even if you've got the slightest inkling of interest when it comes to creating your own business, being self-employed, having a side hustle, an extra stream of revenue coming in, whatever it might be, if you've even got the tiniest little bit of interest in that, I really recommend you go over to selfstarter.com.au and go and check all of that out. And if you do have any questions, please hit me up. I'd love to talk to you. And if I can help you in any way, I certainly will do so. Now, before we wrap it up, as always, if you want to support this podcast in any way, or you want to be a future shout out on one of the upcoming episodes in the weeks or months ahead, there's a whole range of things that you can do that would go a long way for me and have a massive impact on this podcast. You can leave reviews anywhere on the internet. I don't care. It all helps, whether it be Apple Music or on Facebook or some other podcast player or website somewhere on the internet. If you do leave a review somewhere and you want me to see it, please send me a screenshot, because I'd personally like to thank you at the very least, but it'd be great to see it. You can buy merchandise from andysocial.net. I've got a Bandcamp page there. Oh, spit it out, Andy, far out, where you can buy T-shirts, and there's a USB pass with the first 100 episodes of the podcast, and there'll be some more merch being sold through there in the months ahead, of course. You can shout me a beer via the paypal.me button on the andysocial.net page, or just all the usual social media love. tagging, commenting, sharing, retweeting, all that sort of stuff goes a hell of a long way. I'm sure you guys understand the power of social media and all those little algorithms that sit underneath our social media platforms. So every time you guys interact and leave a comment or tag a mate or whatever it might be, it just helps bring it up closer to everybody's eyes so people can discover the podcast and hopefully tune in and listen. And it does work, and more people listen to this podcast each and every week. So I thank you guys so much for all the help, and I do notice it, and it means a hell of a lot to me, and I'll get around to thanking all of you in the months ahead, no doubt. So that's it, guys. Until next week, I've got more podcasts coming. I really thank you guys for giving this one a crack. It's a little bit different, a little bit of a crossover, being a little bit strategic, crossing the audiences over. But I really hope that you guys got something out of it. Would love to hear from you. Always up for suggestions and blah, blah, blah. I've got to stop talking. Until next week, see you guys. Ta-ta. You're a day. You're a